Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't, lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity weight, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
All right. Today on It's My House, we're picking up from yesterday. We're going to do some trending topics later on these trials and whatnot that are going on across the country. But we're picking back up the law of repetition times 10,000. Matter of fact, you know what? I'm going to change that right now during this podcast. All right, the law of repetition times 100,000. All right. Robin, are you there? If you are, press 1. we want to roll into the motivational lineup. Pianki and Ivy, if you're listening, Calvin Mackey, there's a talk that he's doing on planting seeds, and I attempted to get the audio, but I got to find a server that'll let me get the audio, the one that I usually use or had been using for the last few years, says, at least on this machine, says it's corrupt, the corrupt route. So Robin's got a better method, but Robin's not here. But anyway, Calvin Mackey, we shall be playing him. And if anybody wants some, suggest some morning motivation, let me know. And, we'll put it up there to maybe make it part of the morning. Okay. So the law of repetition times 100,000 That's what we're going to. Let's go back to Steve Harvey on 10 by 10 and then get into the law of repetition times 100,000.
Listen to me. Rich people think differently. So what I'm going to put in your head today is a rich people concept so you can get to understand it. The only difference between successful people and not is just how they think. Rich people think different. Quit letting people tell you you got to get qualified in another program. You don't need another program to be successful. You need to change the way you think. So here's the deal. The problem with becoming a millionaire is that when you decide that you want to be a millionaire, you immediately start thinking, how can I become a millionaire? Well, that thought don't just pop into your head, so you get frustrated and you don't become a millionaire. And you start creating stuff like, well, I guess this wasn't the Lord's will, or as soon as I think of how I'm going to make a million. You can't think of how to make $1 million. Stop. Do you know if you knew how to make $1 million, what's the day, Tuesday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? Wouldn't not you make it by Friday? But suppose I told you how you can become a millionaire with what you have. Because here's the deal. All of you have everything it takes to become rich. You just don't believe it. Now, if you can develop this theory that I'm about to share with you, I have the way for you to be rich. This is it. First of all of you have a gift. God gave it to you when he created you. God never created a single soul without giving them a gift. That's the God that created you. He's a very smart God. Here's the cold thing. When he made you, he put the gift inside of you. He didn't hide it under the ocean. It ain't on the mountain nowhere. It ain't under no rocks. You ain't got to go drilling. God put what you needed inside of you at birth. All of you have a gift. But you have got to do your gift, the thing God gave you at birth to do. It is the thing that you do the absolute best with the least amount of effort. That's your gift. Anything else you doing, you wasting your time. Do you hear me? You wasting your time. If when the alarm clock goes off in the morning and it makes you sick every morning that alarm go off, it's because you ain't doing your gift. You're going against what God created you to be. Do most of you know what your gift is? Who in here doesn't know their gift yet? Okay, let me tell you what you do. Go home today. Don't talk to nobody. Sit down and have one conversation with yourself. What is the thing that I do the absolute best with the least amount of effort? This ain't going to take you long. You old enough, you grown. Write it down. I don't care if it's networking. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's doing color. I don't care if it's painting. Whatever it is, it's what you do. Sing it. Whatever you do the best, write it down. That's your gift. That's it. You ain't got to go asking a bunch of people. They've been telling you your whole life. You know, you ever have people call you with their problems? They always call you with your problems because you gifted at it. But you didn't know how to identify it. If you identify your gift. Now, let me ask you this question. This thing that you're gifted at, if you did it for somebody, do you think somebody would pay you $10 for your gift? Just $10. Could you babysit for $10? Could you cut somebody's hair for $10? Could you cut their grass for $10? Could you make them a chicken dinner for $10? Could you do something for $10? Everybody, don't you have something somebody would give you $10 for? Okay, now, once you have something that somebody's willing to pay you $10 for, this is how this works. It's called the multiples of 10. See, you don't have to figure out how to be a millionaire. You just got to figure out the thing that makes you $10. So now here we go. You do it and you make $10. Soon as they pay you the 10, go do it 10 more times. Whatever it was. Watch some more kids 10 more times. Get another 10. You got $100. When you get $100, whatever you did to make that $100, listen to me, do it 10 more times. You ain't got to get tricky with it. Just do it 10 more times. You'd have made $1,000. Whatever you did to make the $1,000, don't get smart. Stay stupid now. Do it 10 more times. You have now made $10,000. Hold up. Now we finna grow a little bit, but guess what you got to do to grow? You just got to do some more. Whatever you made $10,000 doing, I need you to do it 10 more times. What you tripping for? If you do it 10 more times, you got $100,000. Now, you might have to hire some people to make this happen. You got to figure that part out. But all you got to do is do what you did for $10. Once you make $100,000, uh-oh, if you just do it 10 more times.
All right, then Steve Harvey is, he's giving his version of what I call the law of reputation, not reputation, repetition. Okay, the law of repetition. Let me see, let me go to Robin real quick. Good morning, Robin. If you're there. Okay. She might not be there. All right, well, I'm going to mute her mic real quick. All right, let's get into today, the more on the law of reputation times 100,000. When I was in high school, I probably shared this story before, but it's a simple story, and you can apply it to business or anything in life. I would say what helped get me a basketball scholarship to a Division I school was that every other day I would go out and shoot 500 baskets a day. 500 baskets. Now, I became a pretty good shooter. And score. All right. Knowing what I know now, I would have gone out and made 500 shots a day. Actually, a lot more than that. But I'm just simplifying this. Because in order to make 500 shots a day from different positions on the court, Robin, I'm getting you on air. You've got to take more than 500 shots a day. So we're going to play an audio that some of you guys have heard a gazillion times because we want to, I'm tailor-making it. It's my house style of what we've already started, but I'm tweaking the formula. Okay, Robin, good morning.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Hello? Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I can hear you. Is it possible that you can go on YouTube? There's a guy named Calvin Mackey, and he's got a talk called Planting Seeds. If you put in Calvin Mackey, Planting Seeds, and see what comes up.
Yes, one second.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's take a look.
Hey, guys, welcome to Forward. We're new to...
Sorry about that. Calvin Mackey.
You know what? Calvin Mackey, Planting Seeds. While you look for that and then download it, I'm going to play Laura Nelson, and I'll come back to you. Okay, so I'm going to mute your mic for this next bit.
All right.
Also tonight, the incredible transformation and the Buffalo Strong spirit that made it all happen. 7 Eyewitness News reporter Taylor Epps shows us how a young lady has completed her very own renovation project.
11-year-old Lauren Nelson had big plans for her summer.
I thought it was going to be pretty fun, but with COVID going on, it was going to be not as fun as it could be.
But things changed one day when she was flipping through an American Girl doll magazine at her home in Attica.
And she showed us a $650 VW bus. My husband was like, that's ridiculous. You could buy your own camper for that price.
So she did just that. Lauren saved some money and started looking. A neighbor just down the road had this 20-foot camper that caught her eye.
And then the one day, up popped a for sale sign, and she squealed the whole way home,
and she started negotiating.
It wasn't very hard. He said $500, and I said $400 because that was the money that I had in my bank account, and he said sold.
Then it was time to renovate.
It was a process. We brought home a family of mice. And so there was a lot of deep cleaning,
but that didn't stop her.
I was very motivated because I really wanted a place where I could just, like, hang out like my own house.
The whole renovation process took Lauren about 2 months, and with the help of family and friends, she was able to turn this into this.
It's called Camp Hygge. It means very comfortable and safe. It has its own kitchen and bathroom, so it's like a tiny house.
So now you're the owner of a tiny home at 11 years old.
Yes.
The whole project cost her $800.
She has 3 envelopes that she puts her money in, give, save, and spend. I think she made a really good choice. She now says she's part of the Tiny Home Nation.
She was able to turn her summer around and hopes to inspire others to do the same.
Which is awesome to see that somebody who's 11 years old had her own vision but now is out there and other people are contacting us and they've gone out and bought a camper to do the same thing. If you're looking to have some big plans in the future, you should go out and do it. Make it happen.
In Attica, Taylor Epps, 7 Eyewitness News.
Okay. Now, we're going to come back in a few minutes and break that down on how we... This is what we've already started, but I'm adding a tweak today. I'm adding a tweak. And you can join with us, too, on whatever type of Laura Nelson project that you're going to work on. Laura Nelson is 12 years old right now. She did that when she was 11. You don't have to do that. We're doing that and things similar to that dealing with housing. But pick something simple, whatever that might be in your world. The thing is, we want to apply the law of repetition to that. Now, what we're going to get into when we come back, because Robin's got this thing for Calvin Mackey that was, and Calvin Mackey was recommended by Pianchi. Thank you, Pianchi, for that. We want to, in other words, imagine, if an 11-year-old could do it, anybody can do it. Okay? Now, imagine taking something as simple as what Laura Nelson did. Let's blend it into today's podcast title. Imagine if she did that 100,000, not only did that, but then sold. Okay, and let's say she sold them for $1,000 a piece. She only made a $200 profit off each. But if she did it 100,000 times, that's $100 million, or euro, whatever currency you're selling it in, by doing something as simple as an 11-year-old did. That's what we're going to get into, the mechanics of that. That's the tweak with us. All right, now, let's go to Calvin Mackey. Eric, Rob, you got Calvin all queued up? Okay, she's somewhere. Because I wanted to have him planting seeds. Okay, hold. Let me see if I can reach Robin. Oh, let's see by another
I'm back.
Way.
I dropped off for a second.
Oh. Okay,
can you hear me?
You got
can
it all queued
me?
Up, ready? Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, you ready?
Ready. Play Calvin Mackey.
and we need leaders now. Then Elijah Manning said that I'd rather go to hell by choice than a they're following the crowd. Some of you are writing to lead your brother the wrong way, but we need you all to be able to think critically such that when that brother decides to go the wrong way, you say, I'm not going and you shouldn't go, but if you go, I'm not. Stand up and be your own man. Stand up and be your own man. Stand up and be your own man. In June 1985, my mom brought me to Morehouse. This is about seed planting. And she came up on campus. This is probably what your mom did for you. And when she came up on campus, my mom only had one thing on her mind. She said, where will my baby be living? And they said, the dormitory room is over there, Miss Mackey. And she went to the dormitory room, and she kicked the door open, and she looked, and she said, oh, no, that's not good enough for my baby. She said, where's the bathroom? She said, the bathroom over there. She went to that bathroom door, and she kicked it open, and she stepped in. Something about mothers in bathrooms I never understand. And she was like, oh, no, that's not good enough for my baby. And she said, come on, we have to go to Walmart. My mom took me to Walmart. When we got to Walmart, she bought some Lysol, some Pine Sol. She bought some Comet, some sheets, and some towels. And she bought me some new drawers, some new underwear. I said, Mom, I don't need no new drawers. She said, boy, get the drawers. You might get in a wreck. I said, I'm not worried. If I get in a wreck, I'm not worried about my drawers. She said, boy, get the drawers. We got the drawers, came back to the dormitory room. She mopped the floor. She put the sheets on the bed. She put the spread on the bed. She put the towels in the cabinet. And she grabbed that Pine Sol. My mom loved that Pine Sol. And she went to that bathroom door. She kicked it open, and she put that Pine Sol all over that bathroom. All over. And I mean, the Pine Sol was so strong, we had to go to the bathroom like this. One young man said, man, your mama said, but don't say nothing about my mama. She came back out. We looked at the work that she had done, and she gave me a hug and said, handle your business. And she got in the truck. She was about to pull off. And she looked up, and tears were coming out my eyes. She stopped the truck. She got out. She said, boy, what's wrong with you? I said, Mom, I don't want to see you go. I've never been away from home. And she said, look, if this isn't the place where I raised you to be to make your dreams come true. She said, if this isn't the place where your creator has placed you to make your dreams come true, she said, get in the truck. I'll take you home. Now, I didn't say this. I just thought this. Because in 1985, we talked back to our mom. Should have put a whole leg in our mouth. So I just thought this. I was waving goodbye thinking this. Well, with that attitude, just going back to New Orleans. I'm not going with that. Young man, that was June 1985. To show you that you'll be put in positions that you never thought, that's why you've got to do all the things now, so that you'll be ready for that moment. June 1995, my younger brother called me and told me he had been accepted in North Carolina School of the Arts. 1 year previous to that, on May 31st, if I wasn't a man on May 31st, I became a man on June 1st, 1994. And people say, Calvin, how did you know if you wasn't a man one day, you was a man the next day? April 3rd, 1994, I got a call that changed my life. April 6th, 1994, I was going to stand before a board of experts and defend my PhD proposal. They were going to vote me up or vote me down. April 3rd, 1994, at the 10 days of 51, my mother called me and told me that she had been diagnosed with terminal breast cancer. I said, I'm coming home. She said, stay there. I said, I'm coming home. She said, stay there and get your education. People at Morehouse rallied around me. 3 days later, I defended my PhD proposal and almost passed out from the stress. My moral family picked me up, took me to the airport, and flew me down to New Orleans to see my mom. For the next 2 months, I was going back and forth between New Orleans and Atlanta. It's real, young man. May 31st, 1994, in a house that my father built for myself, my other five siblings, my mother, at the tender age of 51, died upstairs where we sat downstairs. Now, I don't care how old you are. I don't care if you're 80 and your mom is 100. Nothing can ever prepare you for the pain of watching the undertaker come into your house and remove your mother's body. Nothing. Nothing. And I sat there because I wasn't only there to see my mother. But at the age of 27 years old, while planning my mother's funeral, my younger brother and sister were supposed to go to their promotional exercise from the ninth grade at the junior high school my mom had sent to all her children. I wasn't only there to see my mother. I wasn't only there to see my younger brother and sister go to their promotional exercise. But at 27 years old, while planning my mother's funeral, less than 12 hours later, I was to be the speaker at my brother and sister's ninth grade graduation. I sat there with my head in my hand. I was wondering what I was going to do. My younger sister turned to me and she said, are you speaking tomorrow? And I thought about it. I said, yes, I am. My younger brother turned and said, you speaking? I said, yes, I am. I said, you marching? She said, I'm marching. Turned to my brother. I said, you marching? He said, I'm marching. And right then and there, I realized my mother taught us something in depth that many people live a lifetime and never learn. And young men, that is life is for the living. And every day you got to get up and be about the business of making your dreams come true. Every day. Every day. This is what your parents want from you. They don't want a car. They don't want riches. They don't want a house. Now, if you give them that, that's all right. But this is what they want. This whole speech is about this. This is what Morehouse wants. This is what your parents want. What they want from you is to know that when their eyes close and they're no longer here, that you will be able to take care of yourself. That's all. That is all. That is all. That is all. One year later, June 1995, I threw my brother up to Atlanta, put him in a truck. He's rolling up to North Carolina. We're going down the street. He said, man, I wish Mama could be here. I said, look, man, Mama can't be here. You hang in there. We rolled up to North Carolina School of the Arts. We put up on campus. I had one question. I said, where's the dormitory room? And they said, the dormitory room is over there. And I went and I kicked it open. And I looked. I said, oh, no, that's not going to do for you, bro. I said, where's the bathroom? They said, over there. I went and I kicked the bathroom door and I stepped in. I'm like, oh, no, no. I said, come on, we have to go to Walmart. Look, I took him to Walmart. When we got to Walmart, I bought some Lysol, some Pine-Sol, some Comet, some Cheetos, some towels. You know what else I bought him? Some Listerine. He said, man, I don't need no drugs. I said, boy, get the drugs. We got the dog, came back to the dormitory room. We mopped the folks with the sheets on the bed, put the spread on the bed, put the towels in the cabinet, and I grabbed that pine saw. Now, what's that bathroom doing? I kicked it open, and I stepped in. And I stepped out. I said, no, you got to clean your own bathroom. I said, no, brother. You got to clean your own bathroom. Young man, Mommy and Daddy are not always going to be here. And you got to take personal responsibility for your safety, your life, your career. Right now, not tomorrow. It's too late. We need it now. Look at your hygiene. Look how you carry yourself. Understand you've been prepared to deal with the world and sit with kings and queens, and that training starts today. So we went back to the room, and I gave my brother a hug, and I said, handle your business. And I got in the truck, and I was about to pull off. And I looked up, and a tear was coming out his eye. I stopped the truck, and I said, man, what's wrong with you? He said, bro, I don't want to see you go. And I said, boy, look, if this isn't the place where your mother raised you to be to make your dreams come true, if this isn't the place where your creator placed you to make your dreams come true, I said, get in the truck. I'll take you home. And I guess he thought like me, young man, because when I pulled off, he was standing there doing it. Young man, I tell that story to say this. If this isn't the place where your mother raised you to be, where your father raised you to be, if this isn't the place where your creator placed you to make your dreams come true, please quit. Tell Mama to wait. Put your stuff back on the car and get out of here. We don't need you, but we want you. You've been chosen, and you got the opportunity to sit at the knees of experts who are going to tell you and teach you everything you need to do to take on the world. And we don't have time for the foolishness that we see in the world and on the street. We don't have time for it. We need you to take responsibility for your life. We need you to grab this bridle and ride and do all the things that you're going to do. Have fun while you're here. But change yourself and transform your mind. We're not here to play. We're not here to play, to dream, to drift. We got hard work to do and loads to lift. Young brothers, shun not the struggle. It's God's gift. God bless you, and I want to be here in 2010 when every one of you all walk across the stage. God bless you. God bless you. God bless you. God bless you.
All right, that was Calvin. Wait a minute, is he still talking? We want to get all of them. Okay, I think that's it.
No, he's done.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Robin. All right, so that was Calvin Mackey, and we're going to play more of him, at, you know, not today, but later. But, you know, weekly, we're going to might add him into the morning rotation. I got to listen to more of him, but I like that talk, so thank you, Pianchi, for making us aware of Calvin Mackey. Today, before we get back into... and this week is the trending topic, or one of the primary trending topics has been these trials in Wisconsin and Georgia. So we'll get to that in a moment. But Calvin Mackey, and, you know, planting seeds, that was the name of the talk that Calvin Mackey just gave. If we take what Laura Nelson did at 11, like I said, she's 12 years old now, let me give some statistics, because now we've already started. Last weekend, I did 20 offers on Saturday, 20 on Sunday. Then I did 100 on Monday or Tuesday. We're trying to make this into a daily habit. But I've been tweaking as I'm doing this, because I can see, number one, I'm going to need some help to do it. And then number two is, and you know what? The more you do it, you can self-correct. You can self-correct, just like in the book, the first 20 hours. All right? But it didn't take us 20 hours to learn how to make a lot of these offers. So let me give you some stats here. Now, what we're doing, now you can do the same. Look, you can apply the law of repetition to baking cookies, cupcakes, playing the stock market, whatever your thing is. Once again, find something that you've done successfully at least once, just once, and then, and you don't have to get fancy with it. It's just keep on doing it. But, you know, instead of just doing it one time and, you know, one or two times and you're successful at doing it, now you got to tailor make. I can do it for what I'm doing, because the way I'm doing it, basically involves clicking a mouse, responding, then getting the phone number, and then making phone calls. But I can go through a lot right by clicking the mouse the way I'm doing my making offers to purchase mobile homes. And my definition of mobile homes is more different than the average person. Let me give some statistics out
here. I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
So as you're going along, do you narrow it down where you're looking and where you're buying? Do you narrow it down to, or are you having to adjust it to a certain area?
That's the perfect question and the perfect setup, because that's what I'm getting into right now. And that's what I've had to do. Now, once again, the model I'm going by, okay, if you're baking cupcakes, just do it for cupcakes. Do it 100,000 times, which is a goal, okay? And for me, I looked at all right, 100,000 times. I looked at, all right, what can I do 100,000 times in 10 months? If I'm successful in doing this 100,000 times in 10 months, then I can take a 2-month vacation. All right. So now, what I discovered is, because what I'm going by, if I'm modeling Laura Nelson as close as possible, is she bought a camper for $400. Now, she put $400 into it and she sold it. So I'm looking for, at first I was looking for mobile homes and or travel campers for $5,000 or less. Okay, there's plenty of them out there, but you're typically not going to find them, a glut of them, in one location. So here's where answering your question, Robin, because you know I like statistics. In the United States, there's anywhere between 19,495 to 19,500 towns in the United States. All right. Let me go to statistics, and then we'll go through how I fine-tune this, what we're doing now. Out of that 19,500, 14,768 of those towns have a population of 5,000 people or less. All right? There are only 10 cities in the United States that have populations of 1 million people or more. Now, flag on it, well, not a flag, but star by this one. I'm not looking for anything. I'm not going fishing for whales. Okay? I'm not looking for anything in a city that's got a million people or more. And there's only 10 cities like that in the United States. So I'm not going fishing for a $400 to $800 property. It could be a camper, it could be a camping trailer, it could be a mobile home, it could be a house. I've bought houses, brick and mortar houses, for $500. They're out there, but that's another podcast. But you know what? Go look anywhere in the Rust Belt, Indianapolis, Cleveland, Detroit, place, you know, Buffalo, New York, Rochester, all those places. They got, if you want a brick and mortar house, those cities have it. Okay. Now, but I'm looking for something that's not classified as real estate, but as housing. So I'm not going to find it in the top most densely populated cities in the United States that have a million. But it's only 10 of them. Okay. So next statistic is 47%. Well, let me go before that step. Only 4% of the towns in the USA have populations of 50,000 people or more. Ideally, I'm not looking in towns that have populations of 50,000 people or more. You can find some gems in those cities, but ideally, I'm not looking for those in those towns. Once again, what I'm looking for are housing in the form of my broader definition of a mobile home, which could be a tiny house, it could be a single wide, a double wide, it could be a travel trailer, also known as a camper, with a bathroom and kitchen. If I go fishing in the top most densely populated cities in the United States, three of them in Texas, San Antonio, Houston, the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex area, New York City, Chicago, those places, L.A., San Francisco, I'm not going to find, it'll be difficult if almost impossible. That's why I don't go fishing in those places. If you do find them, where dimension-wise, well, you know what, you're not going to find them for the price range of $400 to $800. You're not going to do it. All right, so the last number I want to give out here is 47%, and that's almost 50%, 47% of the towns in the United States of America have a population of 1,000 people or less. That's where L.A. goes fishing. That's where I go fishing. Okay. Laura Nelson, I don't know how big Attica, New York is, but it's no Metroplex, I guarantee you. All right. Well, matter of fact, let me look at that right now. Attica, New York. Attica, New York.
Once you find a place, after you buy it, do you sell it?
Oh, no, we got to find it first. So the places where we're going to most likely find something for housing that people will live in and buy and live in are typically in places that have a population of, well, anywhere between $5,000 below, but I'm going to say the best deals are found in communities that have a population of 1,000 people or less. When I went, Attica, New York has a population of 7,702 people. That's where Laura Nelson found her camper for $400.
And
so
you
just
know,
on the giddy up, I'm not looking at, ideally, I'm not looking at any town over 8,000 people.
Uh-huh. It just sunk in my head, too, that they're going to buy. They're buying them to live in. I'm like, duh. You know?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, well, after they buy them, where you can move it, where you can live.
I had to get back with a lady tonight. I had to get back to a lady tonight that hopefully we can find a way to get her into my backyard. I don't know how we're going to navigate it. But, and I've been talking to her for about a month now, maybe a little bit over that. She bought her camper. And she's a grandma. God bless Walmart and the Walmart crowd. That's how Sam Walton and his wife Alice became billionaires. It's what I call here in the United States, the bottom of the United States pyramid. It's not the bottom of the barrel. But these people have money, but they're very, compared to somebody that might live in Seattle, Chicago, D.C., Miami, they know how to shop, they're frugal, and they're less likely to waste money. Now, Laura Nelson, according to the news report, Attica, New York has a population of 7,702 people. Populations like that is what I call the real United States of America. D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia, San Francisco, St. Louis, San Diego, all those places with larger populations are now not in L.A.'s definition of the United States. They're in the United States, but they're not representative of the United States of America. Where Laura Nelson bought that camper for $400, that's in the real United States of America, where there's less rules and regulations, more than likely it's Trump country, which that's fine, and you have more freedom to do what you want to do and live the way you want to live legally. It's just easy to do it in places like that. So hold on, wait, let me go back a minute. So 47% of the towns in the United States of America have a population of 1,000 people or less. Half Oklahoma, less than 300, no more than 350 people. Some in Oklahoma, I doubt if they have 200 people. Tallahassee, Oklahoma. These are black townships. You know, maybe 100 people. All right. There's, put it this way, there are more Taft Oklahomas, population 350 of people, than there are New York cities. Sam Walton saw that. And other people on his level as well. Now, so that's where we're going. That's where we're going fishing. In small little ponds, or maybe some small lakes. We don't want to go into a big lake, but it'll have to be a small lake, or ideally a pond. Now, once again, you can apply this principle of law, and that way, when you, so to answer your question even more, okay, so it might be, all right, let's use Steve Harvey's 10 by 10 thing. All right, so what's today, Friday? So today we might have, you know what, we might have 10 towns for each day of the week. You know, so Monday we got 10 towns. On Tuesday we do another 10 towns. On so by Friday, we've done the 10 by 10 on 10 different towns. All right, which depends on how you do your math. You got anywhere on a low end 100 to on a high end 500 towns that you've done in a week. Because what you're looking for are tiny houses, and I got a definition for that, but housing, it could be a camper, a travel trailer that's got, and once again, that ideally has a bathroom and a full bathroom and kitchen and bedroom and a small living area. That's what we're looking for. Now, something that you brought up, Robin, yesterday, and I'm glad you brought it up. That's why I'm glad you're partnering with me on this, is even if it doesn't have a bathroom, full bathroom, or kitchen, we know how to put together the component parts and add it in there at a very affordable cost on our end, which will bring up the value on whoever we're selling it to. Okay. Now, let's go back and do some arithmetic. If Laura Nelson, because she's just 12 years old now. Now, if Laura went out and now she did it with her mother, father, and grandmother, and you know what? Let's say Laura and her 9 friends. I'm not going to play that audio because y'all didn't hear it a gazillion times. But let's say Laura, in a 10-month period of time, did it 100,000 times, the law of repetition. What Laura did is not rocket science. You don't need a high school diploma. You don't need a GED. You don't need to be Ivy League. You don't even have to be a certified mechanic or contractor, a licensed contractor, to do what Laura did. That's why I'm calling what Laura did, where she did it, is in the real United States of America. Okay. Now, let's say out of a 12-month year, they decide, okay, the goal is we're going to do 100 of these with our 9 friends in 10 months. They take 2 months of vacation. That'll be their reward once they get through this. All right. And then that comes down to, you know, they're going to have to make about 500 offers a day. That's offers. Okay. With a phone, laptop, desktop, you can solo do 500 offers a day just as an individual person. Of course, the more people you add into it, the better it gets. But let's say Laura and her 9 friends did that 100 times in a year, and let's say, once again, let's say she only makes a $200 profit off of each one. But she did it 100,000. But they renovated, or they fixed up, because all she did was, you heard the audio. All right, it came with a family of mice, so they had to get rid of the mice. Then they had to disinfect, and then Laura put her own touch to it. So let's say they put it back on the market, and they sold it for $1,000, making a $200 profit. But they did it using the law of reputation, not reputation, law of repetition. That's $20 million. An 11-year-old and nine friends times 100,000. And now, Laura had to come up with $400, well, $800 initially. $400 plus $400. You don't have to do that. I'm trying to sell people on the idea of the law of repetition. It can be, look, cupcake, whatever it costs to go to the dollar store or grocery store, wherever you go shopping, and buy you a box of cupcake mix. Okay. And then get you one of those cupcake pans and whatever you need to make, for whatever it costs to make a batch of cupcakes, start, but do it 100,000 times as a goal. I'm not saying doing it all in one day, but as a goal, if you think you can reach this in 6 months, 12 months, whatever it might be, make it a goal. All right. If you got a kid that wants to make got cut from the basketball team and, you know, still likes basketball, wants to go out next year, all right, that's fine. Tell that kid, go out and make 100,000 baskets. Don't take 100,000 shots. Make 100,000 shots for basketball, soccer, whatever it might be. You know, if you want to become a prolific person at changing tires, find something simple that you have successfully done. Just one time. Design your life in order to reach this goal, I've got to make a certain amount of, now in my case, me and what Robin were working on. All right, here's what, you know, so in other words, here are the counties or here are the towns that, because now, for instance, the 4 acres up in Hamilton County, all right, I guess we're going to have to make that into an intentional community. I do have some feedback already. But I have found some campers that are within the lower Nelson price range. I found that. But the thing is, okay, the town where I had to go pick it up might be 3, 4, 5 hours away. So this is where this tweak comes in at. Okay, I'm going to have to, in my search, which I can do online now, is, okay, what other towns are within this certain mile radius, or a one county radius surrounding this particular town? That's where I'll be looking today and this weekend, because we're going to have to spend, ideally, with a camping travel trailer, we can hook it up into a normal car or a normal pickup and then drive it to our location in Hamilton County and, you know, go from there. So that would fit the budget I'm working with. Okay. Whereas if it was a mobile home, single wide or double wide, okay, where the tow at 1 or 2 or whatever might cost $5,000 or $6,000. No, that's not in the kitty. We need I know people with a pickup truck, and I know people with a car, and the cars have the horsepower without straining, where it can, you know, hook it up and move it to our, you know, move it to our 4 acres. So, that's what we'll be doing. And I think, Robin, the other day when we were looking up in your neck of the woods, some of those towns I'm not familiar with. I don't know the population, but I do know this. We weren't looking in Seattle.
Right.
Because Seattle's got a big population.
One thing I learned, in the bigger cities, they will list things for rent. So
yeah,
you
don't
see
like
a
that.
Price
don't
on
like
there,
that.
$900, whatever, and you go, wow. And then they go, no, that's the monthly room, and it's for a room, not the house. So, you know, I'm observing. Yeah, I don't like it either. But I'm observing.
What you're doing, and this is what we're going to include in our Patreon class. I mean, this, of course, Blog Talk's free. And what we'll do at 6 is free. But we're going to lead this over to Patreon probably by Monday, is the best way to learn, in my opinion, is the way you're doing it right now. Learn by doing. Because a couple of days ago we got on, all right, here's the city, and then, you know, stuff like you just mentioned, you learn by doing. The hype people that make these YouTube videos, and I'm not knocking YouTube because I watch YouTube a lot, okay? Because, you know, there's one particular lady that she made like $180,000 in about 9 months doing mobile homes. But very motivational videos she puts out. But it's her and a whole bunch of other people. But the thing is, what you just mentioned, none of them bring up some of the things that they learned along the way to get to that. Because a lot of people get hyped up on $180,000 in 9 months. But she, and that's with 23 transactions. Okay? That's with 23 transactions in 9 months. But she doesn't talk about, and none of these other people do it too, they don't talk about what you just talked about. How many people did you run across that they had it in the for sale section at a very attractive price, but then when you find out after they contact you back, no, it's not a for sale price, it's a for rent sign. I mean, for rent price. You know, she could have gone through 1,000 of those alone in 9 months. We don't know because she didn't mention it.
Mm-hmm.
So she gives us, not only her, but a lot of other people, they give you the sizzle, but Robin just gave you the steak. Okay. So you're going to run into that. That's why the law of repetition. Okay. You just got to do it over and over. I started out $5,000. And I said, you know what, let me lower this. And then let me target in on the cities that I'm looking at. So, I'm in Florida. I'm not going to be looking for anything in Miami, which is Dade County. I'm not looking for anything in those counties. Broward County, which is Fort Lauderdale. I'm not looking for anything in Dade and Broward. Hillsboro, which is about 30 minutes away from me, where Tampa is, I'm not looking for anything in that county. Pinellas with St. Petersburg, I'm not looking for anything in that county. That's about 45 minutes. Yeah, that's about 45 minutes an hour away from me. Orlando, 45-minute drive from me. That's Orange County. I'm definitely not looking for anything in Orange County. Okay. I'm not looking in Duval County. That's where Jacksonville is. That's the largest city in Florida. Florida's got 67 counties. Somebody that just texted me something this morning, you know, because she's trying to find something for me, in here in Florida. I told her I typically don't deal in any county that has more than 15,000 people. Now, that's for this state of Florida. Because if the county population is 15,000, then whatever towns, like, Robin, you know, the county that we're dealing with in Texas, that county only has two towns. That's it. And that gives you a big clue on how I was able to pick up the 10 acres, $200 each. It was in a county, and this county is bigger than the state of Rhode Island. It's bigger than Delaware, and I think it's bigger than Connecticut. It's just one, and Texas has got over 200 counties. But this county, matter of fact, let me look it up. Don't name it, Robin, because I don't want a bunch of people down there following us. We're the mayors down there, so we don't want anybody coming down there. Okay, let me see. Okay. How many? All right. Okay. This county has 6,975 people. That's it. That's why I like Chicago, but I'm not looking for anything in Chicago proper. The last time I was in Chicago, which I guess about 3 years ago now, I met Pleasant Stephens and one other person up in Chicago. We got listeners from Chicago, where it's miles. Probably most of my listeners in the United States, if I had to put any collection of them in one city, it would be Chicago. But we went to Pembroke and Hopkins Park. But anyway, this particular county in Texas has less than 7,000 people countywide, and it only has two cities. They got some little towns there, but that's it. And this county is bigger than the state of Rhode Island, is bigger than the state of Delaware, and I believe it's bigger than the state of Connecticut. So, that's the method to my madness. So, that's how we're able to pick up. And there are people, once again, in these counties or towns, which I call the real United States of America, there are people in these towns that will buy what you have to sell. But they're not paying the sticker shock that people are paying in the 10 largest metro areas in the United States. Okay. Just one example. I have a house in Washington, D.C. The property taxes on that is over $7,000 a year. I don't see where you're getting $7,000 worth of service out of that house. I mean, out of the city, excuse me. Whereas the 4 acres of land that I have here in Florida in a rural area, where I can basically do what I can build the kind of house that I want to build, there is, larger cities have certain red flags that I avoid. That's why I don't really recommend people deal with large cities. Large cities offer comfort and convenience, but there's some red flags. A lot of the towns that I like to frequent or invest in, here's a red flag. If you live in a town that's got a police department, that's a red flag. Why is it a red flag? Police departments are, put it this way, let me do it across this way, L.A. sees it. Any governmental agency on a local level is a profit center and revenue center for that local municipality. I go to places where the local citizens they don't want a local police. That's where I buy. None of the places that I went, now, there might be a sheriff's department in some of these places, but there's a lot of towns in the United States that don't have no police force because the locals don't. Place that I have, 4 acres. First thing, in this particular county in Florida, first thing, you can buy acres of land. My tax bill, if I'm late, is under $150 a year. So in Washington, D.C., New York City, probably Chicago too, or Los Angeles, you can't find an acre of land to buy. I know you can't find one in Washington, D.C. If you go to Rock Creek Park in Washington, D.C., which is, you know, nature and all that, but that's federally regulated. But if you, as an individual private citizen in Washington, D.C. proper, wanted to buy you an acre of land, that's the size of a football, there's nothing there. But, and that's why I recommend to people, find you a place where you can buy an acre or more of land. You'll have more freedom. Put it this way, I found myself, as well as some others that I learned this from, you have more freedom to build what you want to build, do what you want to do in these places. It's easier to start a business. The taxes are lower. You know, you don't really need law enforcement as much as you need in a larger city. The larger the city, or the larger the population of a particular town or whatever, the larger the town, the more rules and regulations that you probably will need. But along with the more rules and regulations, it's harder, in my opinion, to prosper. Okay, and that's why I laid out these statistics. Okay, there are only 10 out of the 19,000 plus communities that they have in the United States that are municipalities. There's more than that. I just told you about the 19,500 towns in the United States that are corporate. They're municipalities. I haven't got to figure on the unincorporated places. But if you stay, well, I told you, 47% of the United States live in towns that have a population of $1,000 or less. Once again, in my opinion, that's where the action is. To start a business, any kind of business. You can scale quicker. I'll give one example, then we'll go to the phone lines here. When I was, when I graduated high school, which was in 1976, I went to a town in Texas, small town in the panhandle of Texas, and I just came from Washington, D.C., you know, White House, Capitol, and all this other stuff. This small town in Texas, and they had something that I never heard of before, never saw before, never experienced before. They had cable television. Never heard. Washington, D.C. didn't have any cable until probably 5 or 6 years or so after I graduated from college. The way a lot of these, and that's Ted Turner, he had the Superstation, and then they had, you know, these other companies. If you want to take a look into the future, I'm gonna tell you two ways to do it. If you want to take a look into the future, I would say 4 to 5 years or more. There are two ways you can do it. In the United States, go around to your small towns. I went to undergraduate school in Canyon, Texas. Canyon, Texas today probably has less than 15,000 people. I don't know how many it had in 1976. But Canyon, Texas, and Pampa, Texas, and Borger, Texas, a lot of these towns that most of you guys never heard of. I can do the same thing with every state in the union. Most of these towns is where you can look into the future, because these little small towns is where the action is. This is where your entrepreneurs go. This is where your visionaries go, because they can go to these towns. It's easier to get political capital. It's easier to get things done legally in these small little towns. Walmart started in Bentonville, Arkansas. Didn't start in Little Rock. Didn't start in New York City. Nothing. I can't think of one billionaire that started in Chicago or some big city like that. Unless they did it in cyberspace, and the powers that be haven't figured out how to regulate cyberspace yet. Barack Obama. Now, this is L.A.'s interpretation. Barack Obama became the first black president of the United States. How? He used social media, the old boy network, and the powers that be didn't know how to navigate it because it wasn't regulated. Donald Trump, and he got elected twice. Donald Trump, how did he get elected? Donald Trump, now this is L.A.'s interpretation. Donald Trump is more media savvy than the old boy network, and he's more definitely more social media savvy than the powers that be, and that's how he got in. People that ran against him, he dropped out early after he spent $100 million. Jeb Bush. Part of the Bush dynasty political family, you know, had a brother president of the United States, father president of the United States, had a grandfather, Prescott Bush, United States senator. Deep, real deep political capital. But his camp didn't know what Trump's camp knew about social media. So, but outside of online, which is still like the Wild West, you know, the guys with, what do you call it, Airbnb, I've told this story 2 or 3 times. You know, they started in San Francisco, which is an extremely regulated housing market. But once they got that app together, you know, because they weren't liked in New York City, Washington, D.C., even their hometown, San Francisco. But they're in over 65,000 other towns around the globe through the Airbnb app, where regulation is not an issue. Where the action is in towns 1,000 people or less. I'm not saying you can't make any money in these other towns because people do. But I'm just saying for the little guy, no matter what it is, going into 2022, look at the small little towns. Before, you know what, this just popped in my mind because we're going to go into trending topics right now. Kenosha, Wisconsin. Let's just crunch a number on that. All right. Kenosha's got a population of 99,000 people. And then Brunswick, Georgia, which I've passed through that town I don't know how many times, but that's all I've done is I passed through. on my way going someplace, you know. Brunswick has a population of 16,122. 16,122 people. The way they roll in Brunswick, completely different than the way they roll in New York City or Chicago or Los Angeles or Seattle. Completely different. The way I'm looking at the Cal Rittenhouse case and the Aubrey case. This is just L.A. and I'm black. In my opinion, it has those two cases. It really has very little or nothing to do with race. It has a whole lot to do with culture and comfort zone. Place that has 16,000 people. That's Brunswick, Georgia. It's culturally different from New York City. Kenosha, Wisconsin, which is an hour north of, Chicago. And Chicago's got over 3 million people. It's completely different than the way they roll in Chicago. What town does Cal Rittenhouse come from? Robin, you know what? Let's see. I'm looking it up now. Cal Rittenhouse, he's from Cal Rittenhouse hometown. Okay. Because I've looked at a little of the trial.
Antioch.
All right. Antioch, what, Illinois?
Yes.
All right. Let's look up the. Antioch, Illinois. It's a village in Illinois. And let's look up the population. The hell? Wait a minute. All right. Antioch, Illinois has a population of 14,622 people. Okay. In Antioch, Illinois, I've watched some of the testimony of him and who killed two people and wounded another one, and I watched the testimonial of the guy who shot Ahmaud Arbery. Now this is just LA's interpretation. I'm a black dude. This is my interpretation, but I believe in their minds, based on cultural upbringing and their geographical neck of the woods where they were brought up, that they believe that they were trying to defend themselves, they had a right to defend themselves, and they saw other examples of other people, maybe not as extreme, over the years that defended themselves. And in a lot of those communities, every other household, if not every household, has a gun. Okay. However, let's go with the New Brunswick case. The New Brunswick case, particularly when you get into the optics of the mainstream media and social media, the typical person, I'm from Washington, D.C. originally, the typical black person from D.C., or even white person from Washington, D.C., or New York, or Los Angeles, or even typical white person from Chicago, they're not going to view it the same way. Because culturally, things are done differently. And the word culture means behavior. It's just people in Chicago, people in Seattle, people in Los Angeles, in these larger cities, things are just done differently. For instance, everybody should know what a Subway sandwich, a submarine sandwich is. Okay. All right, now, if you go into a deli, if you go into a Subway sub shop in Washington, D.C., you know, you order a sandwich, you're ordering a submarine sandwich. Okay. If you drive on 95, 2.5-3 hours to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and you go into a deli and you order a submarine sandwich, well, you know what? They don't call it a submarine sandwich in Philadelphia. They call it a hoagie. Let's say you're ordering, a pastrami sandwich. So it's called a pastrami sandwich in Washington, D.C. It's called 2.5 to 3 hours away on the same highway, Highway 95. You drive to Philadelphia, the exact same sandwich is called a hoagie. You drive up to Rhode Island, Rhode Island, you drive up to Rhode Island or the state of Vermont, Burlington, Vermont, or somewhere in the state of Rhode Island, that exact same sandwich is called a grinder. Same sandwich. But they call different things in different places. It's culture. People speak differently. Different dialects. The guy that you might understand in Washington, D.C., when you get to Texas, you might not understand what they're saying because of dialects.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to tell you, Robin, up in your neck of the woods, matter of fact, even on some of the podcasts that we've had, one person asked outright, is Robin black or, is she white? Or, some people think Robin's white. She can pass on the radio. But she...
I had no idea.
I'm serious. But now here's the thing, Robin. I've known, and this is true, other people before I met you, is I was talking to them on the phone, and I thought they were white too. So
mm-hmm.
It's different parts of the people. So people look at things differently, But they see differently, they hear differently, they do differently. With the Kyle Rittenhouse case, you've got some people that, and I'm just basing it on culture, that, they're all for them. They raised $2 million of bail money, and then that's people chipping in $5 here, $2 there, $1 here, 50 cents there, $10, $20 there. But that's a lot of people that raised $2 million for his bail money. Now, another observation that you brought up yesterday, Robin, you see the man with a different suit on every day. Now, I don't know if he already had those suits or if they took that out of the kitty and, they make him presentable every day in court. You know, he's had two.
Yeah.
He's had two charges dismissed already. So how that case is going to end up, I don't know. I think he might get caught up on one or two of the 12 charges or 10 charges that is left. But then that's just me with my filter on it coming from, because I wasn't brought up in a town that had 16,000 people. You know, and in the case of Ahmaud Arbery, that's an interesting one. Now, you know what? Now, the lawyer for one of the defendants, he has requested twice that the judge remove. He felt that there were too many, he said it, not L.A., black pastors in the, you know, in the courtroom itself. One being Al Sharpton,
yeah.
The other one Jesse Jackson. Now, what I find interesting, and the judge denied him, is, well, you know what? Now, they got some prominent white ministers out here. How come they haven't come and sat in the court? Joel Osteen, where are you? Kenneth Copeland, where are you? You don't see none
yeah.
of them in the courtroom. I'm just saying. Okay.
Yeah.
And had they been in the courtroom, you know, would he have made that request? Or had you know what? I'm sure that these three guys on trial, I'm sure they have spiritual advisors, but nobody brings that up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but like you mentioned before, yeah, offline, Robin, it's, you know, because pastors are business people. You know, if one of the local white pastors showed up to console the Aubreys or pray with them, you know, they might be getting death threats. Or at the very
yeah.
least, the tithes and offerings that you get every month, they won't be there next month. Those are just hypothetical backstories. So, but in Brunswick, Georgia, you know, population under 17,000, you know, that's how they roll there. You know, and if I ever stop in Brunswick, Georgia, because I think I've only passed through there on 95 going, you know, either going north or going to, coming back to Florida. If I ever stop in Brunswick, Georgia, it'll be by Uber, or I'm on an Amtrak, or they have an airport, I'm at the airport. I'm not getting off the plane, or I'm not leaving the airport. But you just have to be. I'm not doing no kind of jogging in a town that's in, you know. Now, there is an exception. I'm removing a race card. I'm going by the vibe I'm getting from the guy who actually shot Ahmaud Arbery. Okay, which I don't think the dude should have been out there with a shotgun or what anything like that. But once again, I didn't grow up in that culture. I'm speaking from a guy who came up in a Washington, D.C. urbanized culture with a larger population. Okay, so I'm based on his testimony, and I believe it was, I mean, he didn't have to take the stand. He took the stand, and I believe the dude is really sincere. But the thing is, the biggest thing I see in the Ahmaud Arbery case, particularly with the son, I haven't heard the father testify or nothing like that, is, and I don't know the guy who's testifying, the son who shot him, I don't know his backstory, I don't know his friends, or nothing like that, but it just seems to me, I'm speculating, this dude has little, matter of fact, him or his dad, I believe, and I'm just speculating right now. I could be 1,000% wrong. I'm speculating that him and his dad had very little or no social capital with people that don't look like them.
I don't know about that because the redhead in the one case, I'm not going to say no names because I don't want to mess it up, but he was on the stand yesterday testifying.
Right, that's the son.
Right.
Okay.
And he had training. I don't know if he was in the military or some sort of community, something, but he had some sort of training where they talked about conflict.
Okay.
Right? And they said how they got him to acknowledge how using deadly force is not your first or resort. And then they were asked, hey, well, were you detaining him? He goes, no, I was just trying to talk to him. And I asked to talk to him, and he wouldn't stop. He just took off running.
Okay.
And, you know, if it was me, if somebody pulls up in a car, slows down, I'm going to take off running too.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
Now you said this guy was in the service.
I can't remember, but like ROTC, ROTC, or some sort of community, whatever, security training. But it was military style, military grade training that he received, knowledge that he received.
Okay.
And so I'm saying social capital, that's when people walk out in the world, you've got social capital. Now, whether you choose to put it in your bank or not, that's a whole other thing.
All right, let me break down social capital. For instance, like me and you talk practically every day. You can build up social capital that way.
Yeah.
Having a cup of coffee or a cup of cocoa with somebody at a Starbucks, that's building up social capital. Hanging out, going bowling, a whole bunch of social activities that you can do that is not work-related. I think those are some of the best. Breaking bread with people. Those are various ways
you
of
have
building
to put
social
people,
capital.
You have to put people in your, you know how you put money in the bank? Well, you need
right.
to put people in the bank, in your
I
bank.
I agree.
Okay.
And that's
if
what I mean.
Has,
I don't think,
if,
you think,
what,
he had,
what,
you think
what,
he, him and his dad had social capital with black folks?
The guy lived there. He didn't live there, but his father's
right.
fiance was there, and he was a regular visitor to that
okay.
place. He had rights to that place. He had social capital up in that place, right?
You know, you're talking about the guy that got killed.
The guy that got killed. Now,
all right, okay.
The young man in that truck.
Right.
He could have just as easily as he shot him, he could have gotten out of the truck and not threatened him, pulled out his gun,
right?
Right? And he could have said, hi, my name is, and I provide security or whatever he was doing.
Or neighborhood watch.
Whatever, you understand?
Right.
But he could have spoken and said something.
Right.
Because they got him to say on the stand, that he never saw a gun. They just saw him. He just saw him running, and he thought that he was going to hurt him.
And you know what? There's a distinction we need to make, because there's a distinction between running and jogging. Now, we know jogging is it is running, but it, I mean, jogging, I'm looking at, you're not going full speed. There's no fear factor. You're just, you know, you're at ease.
He wasn't
running from anybody.
And he was actually, he was on his way home, and he was
right.
actually on the phone with a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And he's telling the friend, hey, this guy is coming up on me with this truck,
mm-hmm.
right? Hey, this guy is us. And the girl on the phone, and I would have done the same thing. Run. He said, I'm almost to the house. Run. Get up in the house.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Okay. He's in
now,
the
let
middle
me ask
of
you this. Do you think that Ahmed Aubrey could have flipped the script and disarmed them mentally and psychologically?
No, I do not, because that man could have disarmed himself. That man didn't even need to pick up a gun in the first place.
Well, that's true.
Once he picked up the gun, oh, he went to shoot him. No doubt about it. Because guess what? And I think this is what, guess what? The first thing that you're taught when you're trained on a gun is gun, and you don't aim it at someone unless you intend to use it. Period, point blank. So when a person puts a gun in their hand, that is intent. I don't care. Just
okay.
Care.
Let's throw this out here. And let me build up to this. Okay. I got a chihuahua here. Okay. Well, about a couple of years ago, I guess this four or five-year-old, him and his dad were walking past the my front yard. And my chihuahua is very territorial. Okay. So, you know, she'll start growling when somebody walks by. So the little boy, 4 or 5 years old, I told him through his, well, his dad heard it, you know, don't run. Okay. And the kid, I guess he didn't hear me, he ran. And as soon as he ran, my dog, I had to go chase my dog down, which is a feat in itself, to go get the, because, you know, it's a natural instinct, you know, if you run. Now, if you're on a path in Alaska, you've lived in Alaska, you're on a path in Alaska, out in the Alaska wilderness, where a lot of people come up missing every year, never to be found again in the state of Alaska. And I figured some of those people, they were on whatever path in Alaska in the wilderness. And they ran across a bear, whatever the hell's up in Alaska, wildlife. And the mistake that they made was running instead of strategically, because that's the instinct. So I'm saying I like to say this. You had, because, man, we're animals too. If you see a dude, now this is a hypothetical now, if you see a dude with a, in this case, a shotgun, I'm thinking, and I've never been in this situation before, I mean, the closest I've been to it is I got cussed out in public twice. I got threatened twice in public. I don't know what the dude had on in either case. But what I did in both cases was, number one, I didn't talk no shit back to him. Number two, I didn't say anything at all. I didn't even say, are you done yet? Because I didn't want to have that interpreted as a smart-ass comment. I just let them blow off their steam. I'm talking about people. One of them was right in my face. I let him blow off his steam, including the threats. And then after he cooled down, you know, a couple of seconds, actually. And he backed up off me on his own. I didn't tell him to back up off me. I didn't get into a pissing contest. Then I left. So I'm saying all that to say is, that's what I'm saying is, you know, if, and I wasn't there because I've never faced a gun, but I don't know if anybody's ever had a gun. I don't know if they had a gun or a knife or whatever when those two times I was confronted. But, because these days you just don't know. But, you know, running makes sense. But in some cases, running just triggers a response where they'll whip it out and pull a trigger. That wasn't the case with this.
Yeah, he already had his gun. He pulled his gun out. And the
right.
man
yeah,
was
yeah.
on
they, well,
the
they came out of the house. The father.
Wait a minute. And the man said he pulled a gun out. Now, at that point, if you see someone pull a gun out on you and they're not the police, you're going to stand there and try to disarm them. I think you'd be ducking, trying to run because he wasn't the police. He didn't identify himself as the police, and he was already chasing him and following him with the vehicle. So all of those are things that someone's coming to get me. And there's no disarming.
And that's a natural thought to be thinking. But when I'm in a strange
that's danger approaching, which is different than an animal, and you getting control of your instincts, not running. This is two separate situations. This man.
I'm in a strange.
He wasn't police. He was
right.
neighborhood watch, okay?
You know,
I don't know, and I haven't heard it said, did the man have a permit to carry? You understand?
Yeah. That's true.
And whatever instance, there's still the law. And the law, I don't care who you are, whether you got a permit or not. You can't just pull your gun out on somebody and shoot them.
You're absolutely right.
You can't
You're
do
absolutely
that.
Right. You're absolutely right.
And
when I'm in a strange location.
I want to shout out and acknowledge Scott Williams in Clubhouse. He just dropped out. I wanted to shout him out while he was in the room, but that's okay.
We're going over time as usual. Yeah. You know what? When I'm in a strange location or if I'm in a geographical location where I'm outnumbered, I've been in Italy when I've been the only black dude around. I've been all through Germany when I've been all. I try to hang. Let's paint this towards the Ahmaud Arbery thing, and we don't know the back. We don't know if people are jogging through that neighborhood. Everything. I would go jogging in suspect areas. If I'm going jogging, I'm going jogging with a white person.
If I'm going to go jog, I'm going to go jog on a track.
That's a safe way to go.
Jogging, it's not unexpected for me to be running. That's what I'm going to do.
Well, then that's a good strategy as well.
I already know that if some fool out there or some policeman out there that's out there extra vigilant to some Negro running down the street. Okay.
Now you know what? I got a friend of mine from high school. He's been on here a couple of times. He goes jogging every day, sometimes twice a day. But he does what you just said. He goes, finds a track, and goes jogging 1 or 2 miles. He does about a mile each time. He puts in his mile 1 or 2 miles a day, he goes to a track. So that's what he does. Me, I do a lot of walking. So when I've been in places where it's been, I mean, I've been in countries where you just don't see that many black people at all. And but I always make friends with the locals, and I know enough of the local language to prevent me from getting in trouble. But more than likely, when I'm out in public, I'm with somebody who is a local. But you're right, Robin. That does make sense. In Brunswick, Georgia, or places like that, if you want to go jogging, you know, go find a track. That's a safe place to go, and more than likely you will be left alone. Let's see. It's 3:14. Your mic is open.
Ellsbury, Missouri. Have you ever went deer hunting?
No, when I tried to go deer hunting when I was like 8 or 9 years old, my mother wouldn't let me, but my stepfather.
How about you, Rob? You ever been deer hunting?
Robin, you there? Is she somewhere around?
I used to go deer hunt. Guess
mm-hmm.
who I deer hunt with?
Your son? Grandson?
Oh, I used to deer hunt by myself. Or with some white fellow hunters that I know. When I deer hunt by myself, I was at Dresser Island, Portage des Sioux, Missouri.
Before we go any further with me, Artie, how old were you when you went to deer hunting by yourself?
I was a grown man.
I
never had no problem with white males out in the woods.
Because there's a lot of grown men, and I'm sure you've met your share of them, that have never gone hunting.
They don't know how to use the guns. I used to go out hunting by myself. I'd go to the marina. I'd get a canoe. And it's right there on the Mississippi River on Slough.
Right.
Brick House Slough. I used to row out across on the island, pull the canoe up, turn it upside down, and go into the island, go into the woods to my tree stand.
Okay.
Heck, I met white males coming in and going out.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I go out there about before daybreak. It'd be dark. It bothered me. Now, I'm not saying that they wouldn't. There would be some cases, but no, I used to do the same thing up around Hannibal, where Mark Twain is famous for.
I never had any problem. The last all-white environment that I was in was up in West Virginia. And, hey, you know, they were just working-class guys going home or doing whatever they do.
Absolutely.
I've never had any problem at all.
And with this case here, she say he jumped out with his gun. I thought they had a shotgun.
I thought the son had a shotgun, yeah.
That's where he got shot with, the shotgun, right?
Yeah, he got shot with the shotgun.
Well, see, now Robin said that he jumped out and pulled his gun out. Where are you going to pull a shotgun out from? Your pants pocket? You see how things get turned around?
Well, the dad had a gun, I believe.
Now, I hate to see that
the
person got
shotgun.
I hate to see that the guy got killed. But I thought they were struggling over the shotgun. And, of course, the news may be wrong, as
they
usually
struggle over the shotgun. It's the shotgun that killed him.
Now, if I was struggling over you with a shotgun, What would be in your mind if I get it? Me and you, L.A., we struggling over shotgun. We don't know cordially know each other. You come up and I grab the shotgun
I'm
barrel.
I'm taking if you got hold of the shotgun, you're going to use it.
Use it on who?
Me. We're the only two up there struggling.
Right. So if I get the shotgun, I'm going to shoot you. And apparently I think you're going to shoot me because I'm trying to take
it. And that's a normal thought to think.
Absolutely. And two, if I grabbed a barrel of the shotgun and you holding on to the stock with your finger there by the trigger, what happens if I snatch, give a good lunge trying to take it from you? What happens to your finger?
Well, the gun's going to go off.
There you go. For those who don't know how that stuff works. And also, it's nothing wrong to be carrying a shotgun. I carried mine in its down position. In other words, it's rest under the stock is underneath my armpit, and the barrel, not the barrel, but the handle is resting over my wrist in a down position. That's the way we walk with it. Until we get ready to cross a fence or something.
Right.
And some people carry it over their back. So I don't know what happened. I wasn't there. And as I said before, the man with the shotgun was going to shoot him. He would have shot him when he got out the truck, wouldn't he? You would think.
Yes, if that was his intent. He could have fired from a distance.
Absolutely. Sounded to me like it was an accidental. And from what I read in the paper, I didn't write these articles, they wanted to question him because there's been burglaries and break-ins in the community for some time. If I'm mistaken, then I deserve to be corrected. Right? Did you read
right,
that?
Right. Well, what I'm looking at it, that's why I said it's not so much, in my opinion, race. It's the here people, they didn't know each other.
How long has blacks been living in that community?
I'm sure blacks live in that community. What I'm saying is they didn't know, you know, it's nice to know your neighbors. And apparently, because obviously Ahmaud Arbery didn't live too far from there, but, you know, you can have people living a block over, you don't know who they are. So apparently,
you can.
Ahmaud Arbery and these people, they didn't know each other. This was the first time
they were
meeting.
You know where the fault really lies? The fault lies in the assholes that was burglarizing them homes in that area. It's because because what they do is raise a height. Where my daughter lives, on 5 acres, down by the mailbox at the road. I've seen black males come walking through there and sit there on the guardrail. What the hell are you sitting here on the guardrail? You don't even live around here. Should I have went out there with a gun? Because you don't know if he's armed or not. And then what makes it worse is that you don't have incidents of people who don't live in the area, like up at the Conoco station there on Bell Fountain Road, where some fools went in there and killed the attendant and robbed him. Another instance, police chasing somebody, and they stopped the car. Then the individuals jump out the car and run down the street. And one of them hides underneath a porch, and he's got a weapon. Well, when the police came up to him, I guess he told them one thing or the other. He ended up killing the man. Another case down at the Quick Trip. You had another incident where somebody was trying to rob somebody in the bathroom and shot him and killed him in the Quick Trip bathroom. So when you have that kind of stuff going on near you, what kind of awareness is you going to have now?
Right.
You follow me?
Right.
Down at the White Castle, down the hill, just before you get to 270. Individuals is robbing people on the lot. And see, at one point in time, this particular area, probably like the one where you we talking about with Albury. And I'm not giving these no excuses. I'm just saying, you know, you got to put all these things together. Oh, I tell you something else. Down from there, down on the Airport Road, Chambers Road, at this little shopping strip, and this is in the, you can Google this, you had a black man that was walking back and forth in front of the grocery store. So the people in the store become alarmed and call the police, Bell Fountain Police. Bell Fountain Police, a man, male and a white male and white female come up and want to question the man because he's acting suspicious. So they're talking and trying to question him, and then they want to search him, and he snatched away from them. All right. So they pull their taser out to tase him. Well, that didn't work. He turned around and started walking away from him. Then he turns around, pulls out a pistol, and shoot both of them, both white cops, the male and the female. Well, luckily, they had on their armor protection.
Okay.
He runs down a block or two and barricades himself in his house. So St. Louis County SWAT team come. They go to the back, cover that, in front, cover that. And I think what they end up was shooting tear gas inside the place. But I guess he's going to go in there and take a nap and wake up 2 or 3 hours and think everything is cool.
Okay.
All kind of stuff is crime is going on in that area. You know, when we was kids, we used to drive, we had a man used to drive us around in his car, his Buick. And we used to go through that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice, pretty home, big ranch-style home. But there wasn't no black folks living out there.
Mm-hmm.
Other than until you got to the reform school that's out there, Bell Fountain Reform School. So what I'm saying is that I don't blame people for feeling upbeat when all of a sudden you have things starting to happen in your community that you ain't never experienced before. Killings, robberies, such and such and such and such. Now, of course, that don't give nobody the right to go out and shoot somebody for no reason at all. But it also don't give somebody else a right to be breaking into folks' homes, ramsacking their garages, and stealing mail out of the mailboxes, stealing the UPS packages.
Mm-hmm. I know one night my stepfather, somebody knocked on the door at 10 o'clock at night or whatever, my stepfather came down the stairs with a gun.
I don't blame him. I mean, that's his prerogative to do. What are you going to come down the stairs with, a hammer?
Well, he came down with a gun.
And
whoever knocked on the door that night.
In Missouri, you can have a gun concealed. You don't have to have no license. Some people say they pass that so blacks can kill each other. You think?
Well, in a place like Chicago, there's a big underground market for, I mean, what not underground? Black market for guns. So I
well, not
a lot
in St. Louis,
there.
You can go
Chicago.
Buy all the guns you want. Unless, you, of course, unless you got a problem. But, and this thing with Kyle Rittenhouse is an issue. Actually, part of it is an issue with the Second Amendment. You got those out there who's anti-Second Amendment want to see a case where a person that used self-defense don't have the ability to use that. And they're going to want to slowly start dismantling the Second Amendment.
Hmm.
And I don't think that's going to work. But as I said before, that young man, I see where he done anything wrong. People tell... You know, the funny thing, people come up with all these excuses. Well, he didn't have no business being there. Okay, well, he works there. He works in the town, pays taxes, so he don't have no business in the town using the amenities that is paid for by his taxes. Well, he still has no business. Well, his daddy live in the town.
Well,
he may run away
day
from
four
that.
Of, today is day four of deliberations for Rittenhouse, and I think the jury might get instructions today for the unless they did it yesterday for the Aubrey case. So I guess by this next week,
I'm gonna donate some more money to her. And then too, what do you think about that?
A lot of people donated money.
Yeah. Then you had a case in Norfolk, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you had a white officer by the name of, I think his name was Lily. Well, the city manager of the Norfolk, Virginia police of Norfolk, Virginia fired him. You know why?
Why?
Because somebody hacked the GoFundMe account and got the names of the people that had contributed to, his name is William Kelly, the officer.
Okay.
The city manager is Chip Filler. The police chief is a black man by the name of Larry Boone. So they fired the man because he donated $25 on his own time in his own house to Kyle Rittenhouse defense fund.
Mm-hmm.
And they fired him. Is that right?
Hmm.
What do you think about that, Robin?
Robin, you back? Her light's still on, but she multitasks a lot.
What's up with them firing this man because he donated toward his defense fund? It goes to show you the mindset of some of these people out here today in 2021 that if you don't think like them, which I guess it's okay, but in this case, this guy here is going to get a whole lot of money out of that.
Well,
he didn't do it on department equipment. He did it at home on his own time.
People are
so
tribal.
If I donate to the NAACP or I donate to Al Sharpton Action Network or if I donate to the Black Panthers, my employer can fire me, right?
Yeah.
Nobody's saying nothing about that.
It shouldn't be, but it's sort of like just like with this COVID thing. You know, some people, they can get, I don't know how they do it, but New York State, but that's a state law. Now here in Florida,
state law for what? Making people take COVID shots?
Yeah, that's the way. That's it's a state law in New York. That's why basketball player Kyrie Irving
he can't practice
or play in New York State.
The courts recently had a stay on those orders, especially from the OSHA. OSHA don't have any business. That wasn't their business to get involved in stuff like that. Actually, you don't even need OSHA no more. You need to get rid of it. Another one, just like the Department of Education. OSHA was to protect workers from things that the employer presented to them, like putting them in danger of chemicals, falls, electrocution, suffocation. It wasn't, that's the health that they're talking about. They're not talking about the employee bringing things to the workplace that's mm-hmm. harming the employer. Mm-hmm. So some of your deviant and evil politicians is using it that way. Well, anyway.
That's true. That's true. So you think they'll bring back the verdict today or will go in, they'll have it in by Monday?
I don't know. It's probably going to
be day four.
Yeah, it's probably
going to
be.
They'll have it resolved. Well, you know what? It could end up in a something will happen before.
It's probably going to be a mistrial.
You know what? I think something will happen before Thanksgiving. That's this coming Thursday.
Because these people that's is being threatened, they allowing people to be out there with loudspeakers and rattling off with a bunch of shenanigans.
Right.
You allow George Floyd's cousin to make the statements that he made. He should be in jail for that. But he's black. They got black privilege, right, L.A.?
They do, for the time being.
All right, I'll see you later, man.
All right, then. Thanks a lot, Bianchi. Thank you, Robin. And on that note, everyone have a good rest of the weekend. Oh, 6 p.m. today, we'll be on Clubhouse with Mobile Home Daily Offers. Mobile Home Daily Offers at 6 p.m. That's our channel or our conversation room on, Clubhouse. Mobile Home Daily Offers. We're working on 100,000 offers.